Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. A special call out to all of our sister stations listening and individuals all over the world. This particular hour is called Talk Back, once a week, no guest, no in-depth investigative report, lots of information on health and healing, also a few comments on the environment. We'll be looking at Monsanto, the debt of farmers and the suicide epidemic in India from Billy Fernandez. We'll also look at the case against Obamacare. And it really has nothing to do with a left-right perspective. It just has to do with people understanding the truth about why we were given this foolish piece of legislation. And also, if time permits, Empire of the Senseless, a lethal competence, Jeffrey St. Clair counterpunch. We have a lot to share. And of course, throughout the entire program, whenever you decide you'd like to ask a question, please do so. Call us at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Also, later this week, probably in about 4 days, you'll have a chance on my noon show, which is heard at also at 3 o'clock in Washington, D.C., a group of individuals who have spent a month. The month will be over on Thursday. And these are people who all had medically untreatable, with any success, conditions. And you'll see what progress have they made in this four-week period. You'll hear as I hear, unrehearsed, non-coached, each person, including a physician who brought his mother for this effort. So we have a lot to talk about. Let's begin. About a year ago, I was in the farmer's market one Saturday at Union Square in New York City, filming the great chef David Boulay. I was not aware until a vendor, a farmer from upstate New York, was talking about, oh, David's brought a lot of products that we never had in the United States before. And I said, really? Give me an example. Well, the purple potatoes. And at that point, this woman held up a basket, the bushel basket of these small purple potatoes. Now, most of us have had purple potatoes. I didn't know that he had taken years of effort at an experimental research organic farm upstate to see, would they actually harvest? Would they be any good? Well, he was the person behind that. He spent tens of thousands of dollars cultivating the purple potato for all of us. Anybody can buy him and use him, but he's a very soft-spoken and self-effacing person. He never takes credit for it, so I want to give him credit for that. Now to the potato itself. There's brand new information about this South American purple potato. And by the way, it's called a purple potato simply because the skin and the flesh are both purple. And there's several types. You have the purple majesty, the purple Viking, and the purple Peruvian varieties. The latest research shows that it's very rich in antioxidants, phytonutrients, and it can help lower blood pressure. Now, as with any fruit or vegetable, the deep, rich colors tell us a lot about the nutrient density. That's why when you have blueberries or raspberries, strawberries or cherries, or any dark-colored fruit or vegetable, you're getting a lot of healing nutrients. And so now we can add the purple potato because it's rich in what are called anthocyanins. Antho, A-N-T-H-O, Cy, C-Y, anin, A-N-I-N, A-N-I-N, anthocyanins. Now, this is all part of a family of flavonoids that are rich in antioxidants, and it boosts the immune system, and it even fights cancer. Now, we've all heard of the super blueberries and super pomegranate. Well, now you can put it right up there with helping to protect the structure of the DNA and encourage the production of cytokines, which are crucial for the proper functioning of your immune response, turning off inflammation in your joints, helping you with arthritis, turning off inflammation in your brain, helping prevent all forms of brain aging, including dementia, Alzheimer's, turning off inflammation in your heart and your capillaries, strengthening the membranes. And in fact, it was at a American Chemical Society national meeting in Denver that showed consuming purple potatoes lowered the blood pressure compared to those who were not eating them. So that's our new nutrient of the day that we should pay attention to. And you can prepare the purple potatoes like any other potato. Remember, never peel the potato. A lot of the nutrients is right in the skin. And it's a very quick cooking potato because it's not very dense. It's very rich in vitamin C, has lots of polyphenols, and a lot of potassium. We have all heard that stress is a major killer. We also know that there's a lot of components to heart disease. Yes, there is, of course, the elevated triglycerides, C-reactive protein, homocysteine, fibrinogen. All of those, when they're elevated, are bad. We also know that eating trans fats, like with French fries and a lot of cakes, cookies, bad. We know that we're eating way too much protein. We're eating probably anywhere from 2 to 10 times the amount of protein that we require in a day. That's bad for the heart. It's also terrible for the kidneys and the liver because the breakdown products of protein is urea and ammonia, both toxic. We also know that we're eating too quickly. We're rushing through our food. We're not masticating and chewing our food properly. We're generally distracted when we eat, watching a ball game or listening to radio or talking on the phone or twittering, and instead of just really enjoying the food. But we also know that we frequently eat the wrong foods when we're stressed. Lots of sweet and lots of salty food. According to UPI, Greek researchers say that cardiovascular disease has a substantial psychological component, and that psychological interventions like music therapy can cut the death rate by 50%. A nurse in one of the studies from the Veterans Hospital of Athens said that they looked at all the different randomized, highly controlled studies of 9 separate ones that were done around the world. And they looked at what were the outcomes when people with coronary heart disease, those are the people who die, have heart attacks and strokes, how did they fare when therapies such as music or meditation or relaxation were incorporated? And they found that it plays a substantial role. And think of how many times, if we simply pulled back from our stress, our anger, our insecurity, our pain, think how much better we feel. I was doing a heavy-duty workout today. I was taking a group of health-challenged individuals on a jog down an old country road. It was bucolic and beautiful. And it's about 2 miles down, 2 miles back, and rarely used. But just imagine this. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. The sun is coming up over the horizon. A beautiful amber color. You see the mist rising off the fields, green with barley and alfalfa and hay. You see the beautiful horses and some show cattle and goats. And it's quiet. And you hear birds starting to chirp. And one of the people stopped and turned to me. This is an 84-year-old woman from the Bronx. She has been given up. She's tried all the therapy from all the so-called best and brightest in the best cancer hospitals. And she said, "I finally get it." I said, "What do you get?" She says, "I get that I can choose what I'm going to do with my life. And you're right. I made my fear of dying and my fear of cancer more important than my life. I had no thoughts except death and dying and separation. And now I see that there's so much more in life. Just this walk, this view that I never get in the Bronx, just this quiet, this being close to nature. I can't tell you how deprived I have been from nature. It's been decades since I've spent quality time in nature. She said, I feel so much better. And by the way, her blood chemistry shows she is doing so much better. But it's that moment. And when I brought them all back, I put on a piece of music. I created this music, along with a musician, in 1988. And it's with flute, and it was done at my home in Florida. And it took about 3 weeks because each morning I wanted to record the doves as they're cooing with each other. And then the waterfalls, and just listening to the different ways that water, and then a light rain, and different birds singing. And throughout all this music, flute and harp and just subtle music. And I hadn't heard that in probably 15 years. Someone actually had it. Someone brought it. Because when I walked in, I'm listening to this, and as they're getting their juice, I'm thinking, wow, where'd that come from? And someone said, oh, I got this. I pledged this on PBS back in 1988 when you were on. And everyone was just chilled out. So think about it this way. Think if you just took some time each day to listen to some soothing music, some relaxing music, spending quality time with your dog, your cat, your bird, your pet, going for a walk, either alone with or your loved one in nature, holding hands, bonding, hugging, being able to sit and relax. For those of you who haven't taken a hot bath, put in some essential oils for the aromatherapy, some eucalyptus, wintergreen, and just luxuriate in that. The simple things that can de-stress us. Because that could cut your risk of cardiovascular disease by half. That helps de-stress. And then you take that energy through the rest of your day. And this study just confirmed it. And by the way, this was not one study. This was a meta-analysis. Meta meaning many. They analyzed all these quality studies and found that it was the same for all nine. I've reported on 22 separate studies that show that cell phones and computers, how close we are, signal towers that are on buildings, overhead power lines, how close you live or exposed to a grid, electrical grid, how these impact our health, always to the negative. This is the latest. This is from Remy Gelli from Mumbai Mirror. Your smartphone is destroying your memory. Quote, your Android or iOS phones are killing cognitive thinking and declarative memory. A Dr. Ben Wallier, psychiatrist at Safi and Prince Alan Khan Hospital, received a call from his brother last week. He said, you're the doctor, but I performed a surgery today. The specialist's brother was referring to having managed to get his 9-year-old son to get off of his smartphone, which he was worried had grown into an extended limb. As soon as my brother would get back home, his son would grab the phone and stay glued to it right until bedtime, playing games and fiddling with apps, said the psychiatrist. Now, this is not a lone case. The head of the Department of Neurology at Seth Medical College and Kim Hospital say the co-relationship between mild attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, which, by the way, it focuses on inattention and impulsive behavior, is in young adults, and the excessive use of gadgets has been the subject of debate at a recent medical conference. And if the smartphone user study is accurate, we should all be concerned. The survey conducted across 46 cities this past year It revealed that the number of smartphones has touched 40 million, almost half the users under 25. The dramatic growth was driven by a desire to, quote, stay connected and have instant access to social media networks. Now, although the gadgets are designed to make life easier and the user works smart, experts warn that their unrelenting pings and updates can throw the brain into overdrive, affecting its cells and blunting the mind over time. Now, here's what's at stake. First, declarative memory is reduced. The culprit? Reminder features declarative memory refers to data that can be consciously recalled, such as an important phone numbers or dates and times of important meetings, and critical dates like your birthdays. That we store in our brain. While earlier, we'd easily remember at least 10 important phone numbers by rote, today we can't recall any on our own. Our mind is not challenged. Everything is fed in the phone book. And under categories, family, work, miscellaneous, sometimes there are so many, we can't recall the face to the name and the number, according to Dr. Rabbit. Next, underdeveloped human intelligence. The culprit? Absence of external stimuli. According to Dr. Shaw, clinical psychologist with the Department of Neurology, is the most concerned about the smartphone's impact on children. She discusses the theory of cognitive development, a comprehensive theory about the nature and development of human intelligence, which deals with the nature of knowledge itself and how humans gradually acquire and construct and use it. Here's what she says, quote, "This mental process of awareness and perception and reasoning and judgment can only be built if the child experiences something physical like playing with clay, blocks, or bat and ball. It isn't possible if the child is staring into a screen and conquering Angry Birds." Now, physical activity, she adds, help build a child's motor skills, a learned sequence of movements that combine to produce a smooth, efficient action in order to master a task. That can range from cutting a paper with scissors to running and jumping, but none of these phones can play a role here. And then finally, we have the human mind is not meant to multitask. I repeat that. Everywhere you go, people pride themselves on multitasking. I have personally stated it is one of the worst things we can do. Why? The culprit? Multitasking features is critical of the internet, which none of us can do without. Our increasing dependence on search engines like Google is making us poor thinkers. According to Dr. Rabbit, our minds are getting lazy because gadgets like cell phones and apps ensure we don't use them enough. In another interesting argument by neuroexperts, the very advantage of smartphones becomes a cause for worry. Smartphones encourage you to carry out multiple tasks at once. According to Professor Nass, professor of communications at Stanford University, quote, "It is not physiologically healthy for you, humans, because we're not built to do a multitude of tasks at any one point. Your phone makes you feel like you have to respond, which then increases your stress and harms your cognitive thinking." And another professor, Benderwala, says that multitasking lessens our ability to focus on what is relevant and rewires the brain to make us shallow thinkers. Very communication features only make us, in effect, dumber. So, just some things to think about. Let's go over and say hello to a few of our guests, or not guests, but people who've called in, because during the whole program, I'm going to be taking your calls. Let's say hello to Eric from New Jersey. Hi, Eric. Your turn.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Thank you. I was wondering, could you suggest on the purple potatoes, here locally, there's only one type of purple potato that I've seen at local grocery stores and farmers markets. They don't have like a organic variety or a regular, so it's just one. Do you know anything about that?
You could easily avoid that by simply going into your farmer's market, because I know the ones in Manhattan are organic. And you could also ask your local farmer's market if they could find the organic variety. There are lists of all the organic farmers in your area, and those farmers have a list of all the certified organic farms and all the produce they have 12 months a year. It's very easy to find.
Okay,
otherwise,
so just make sure to have it organic, okay?
Yeah, I would not eat any potato that's not organic.
Got it. And one more, okay, if I may, about seaweed. Could you give us an update on kelp and stuff? Are you eating it, or do you suggest other people avoid it?
I eat seaweed every day, but I eat nothing. I repeat, I eat nothing from Japan.
Okay.
If you remember, go back 2 years, I premiered a multi-award-winning documentary called Knocking on the Devil's Door, Our Deadly Nuclear Legacy. And for the premiere, I brought in a woman who is known as the Ralph Nader of Japan. And she has helped to organize the challenges against the Fukushima disaster cover-up. She's the one who took on TEPCO, the utility that has lied repeatedly. She challenged the prime minister, who lied repeatedly, and the media, who covered the lies without challenging. And she was the one who came over, brought a child with her, and just showed that they're willing to put their children at risk, their citizens at risk. Now we have the prime minister at the time, who is no longer in the government, who came out, I believe it was just 2 weeks ago, at a conference with two former members of the Nuclear Regulatory Agency, including the former chair of that agency, who, in effect, they're not official whistleblowers, but they're telling the truth, something so unusual with government agencies and bureaucrats and technocrats. And what he said was this. He said, we were terrified that we would have to move 50 million people from around Tokyo. We didn't know where to put them. We didn't know how to get them. So, in effect, they didn't. So if you can't move that many people who are in harm's way, you simply do two things. A, you deny the severity, like the Russians did after Chernobyl. And that caused 1 million people to die in the subsequent years of different cancers. And that's been independently confirmed with 5,000 separate scientific studies in the peer-reviewed literature. And secondly, you only clean up an area close to the plant as if somehow your safety zone of 12 miles, at 13 miles, you're safe. Now, the same way is true in New York City at Indian Point, which long ago should have been shut down. And they have a safety zone for 10 miles. Well, I got to ask you a question, Eric. It's simple. If you have a 12.5-mile wind, and how far will the wind carry radioactive material within 5 hours?
It's going to stop at the 10-mile mark, right?
Absolutely. See how smart you are? By some new law of physics that only politicians could conjure in their alchemy, they assume that all containment by wind, by water, by underground aquifer stops where they say a safety zone has been created. Of course, the laws of physics mean that if there's in 5 hours at 12 miles an hour, you've got 60 miles. 60 miles from Indian Point, you've just polluted 20 million people. Now, of course, since you can't see radiation, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, you're not going to know that you've had a very serious dose, even possibly a lethal dose, or a dose that will later end up causing you your life, until the officials announce that there's a problem and you start seeing the children with blood coming out of their nose, their ears, and their eyes, and think, what has happened? And then it's too late. You can't get an evacuation out of New York. It's not humanly possible. Knowing that they couldn't get an evacuation, they simply said, there is no evacuation. Well, you know, if you drive a car, how many states are going to allow you to drive a radioactive car into their state? And just imagine the cost of this. Let's say Indian Point were to have any form of accident, a natural accident like an earthquake, it sits right on an earthquake fault, or let's say there's an internal problem and it causes some form of explosion. You're looking at probably $1 trillion to $2 trillion in damages. You're looking at millions of people being contaminated. You're looking at every single medical facility in within a five-state area being overwhelmed. You're looking at no way to get the people out. But that's how the game is played. Now, that's here in the United States. Imagine in Japan, where they don't have freedom of speech, they don't have freedom of the press, they have a traditional society that is bound to the corporation, to those in power. They have power. The individual does not. That's why you can sometimes, they even have a word for it in Japanese language for working yourself to death. And so you as an individual don't count. Well, if you as an individual don't count, you have a whole society that doesn't feel that they count, and who am I to speak up against the government? Then you don't. And as a result, you don't have to call it totalitarianism, but you have it. You don't have to call it fascism, but you have it. What this means is that radiation has been spewing for over 2 years, 24/7, into the ocean, into the water, including the aquifer underneath this, and that goes into where they grow their rice, and hot spots all over Tokyo. In fact, recently, Arne Gundersen, a leading scholar in the nuclear industry and nuclear issues, went to Tokyo and just walked around the city. He went on to a children's playground and took a sample of dirt. He went up on top of a building. He went into on a sidewalk. Everywhere he went around Tokyo, he found extremely high levels of radiation. So high that if this was the United States, those entire areas, we'd be quarantined, no one would be allowed in. But once again, you either tell the truth and say you have an uncontrollable crisis, the worst in the world, or you lie about it. But here's the deal. The Japanese government knows the truth. The media know the truth. The scientists know the truth. Utility knows the truth. Some of the Japanese people know the truth. Most don't. When you look at a documentary that was just completed, and it's a farmer who lives about 10 to 12 miles from Fukushima, you see that all of his cattle are sick and dying. You see all of his vegetables, none of them grow. You see a woman in her place, nothing is growing. Everything is dying. You see incidence of thyroid cancer in children. You see these people have cancer, and yet nothing is being done to help them. 78,000 people were evacuated. But realistically, until this completely is encapsulated, and they're not doing that yet, you're looking at probably another year to a year and a half to 2 years before they stop the pollution that is there now. And that means that virtually all the food, all the fish, all the seaweed, all of the product is going to be contaminated. Now, my suggestion is that since our government will refuse to test these for radiation, they'll still continue to come here. So I wouldn't buy anything from Japan, quite simply. And I believe that we're going to see massive evacuations out of at least Tokyo, possibly not in some areas. But that radiation is just keeping into the water and into the wind. Dr. Janice Sherman, a medical doctor who's published in peer-reviewed literature, published an article last year showing that there was an unexplained nearly 20,000 deaths in babies and others with compromised immune systems beyond and above normal after Fukushima. We now know that the waters off California and the fish are having higher levels of contamination. In fact, recently, every single fish that was caught, high levels, toxic levels of radiation. So there are other places. You can get seaweed from Maine, from Nova Scotia. There are organic pools that are growing dalsin and propyl lavern and bladderwrack, kombu, nori, hijiki. So you don't have to buy them from Japan. You can buy them from non-polluted waters. Okay? All the best to you. That was Eric. Let's say hello to Yusuf from New Jersey. Hi, Yusuf.
Gary.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, Gary, how are you doing? My name is Yusuf. Gary, I have a quick question. What can I do to... what can I do to revive my memory? Because I'm having really very bad problems with my memory. And I'm not sure if you have something, you can suggest something for me.
Well, it was Friedrich Nietzsche, the great philosopher, who said, the advantage of a bad memory is that one enjoys several times the same good things for the first time. A lot of people now joke about having a senior moment, those times when their memory suddenly fails and they're unable to come up with the name of their boss or the time they are supposed to meet for dinner. The truth is that throughout our lives, there are always times when our memory fails us. But because we've been taught that memory decline is a natural consequence of aging, and because we fear the onset of serious mental conditions, often related to advancing age, such as dementia or Alzheimer's, lapses in short-term memory as we age can result in ongoing stress and worry. Ironically, stress and worry are two factors that contribute to continued lapses of memory. In fact, bouts of forgetfulness, usually unrelated to Alzheimer's disease, and there's a simple way to prevent and impact memory in a positive way, and to do it with reasonableness. First of all, understand how memory is lost. So let's begin by taking a look at how our brains collect memories. The roots of memory have been studied and debated for centuries, yet many questions remain as to how the brain performs this basic function. What is known is that memories are constructed through a series of interactive steps triggered by exposure to new information. There's a concept called Learning Strategies Corporation by Paul Scheel. And it's a company involved in providing self-empowerment, educational, and health programs. And they point out that memory is not something that is retained in a particular part of your brain. Unlike a computer, which can store information on a hard drive and return to access that specific information, your brain constructs memory from input from the entire neural network in your body. Memory is non-local. Each time you remember something, your brain is literally rebuilding an original construction. In other words, you can't remember something you don't already know. Now, the practice of construction, reconstruction, is critical to memory. And what we call a mental hygiene, which means that you must maintain the brain. Remembering something, whether it's the name of your mother-in-law's poodle or how to dance, is a process that involves much of your brain. The two primary types of memory are declarative and procedural. Now, the brain's medial temporal lobes, particularly the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex, are responsible for maintaining declarative memory, and sometimes called explicit memories. For example, facts, people, places, and things that we encounter frequently. And the capacity to learn skills or procedures, including new motor skills, is governed by our non-declarative or implicit memory. Now, this memory function is governed by brain structures outside the medial temporal lobes, including the amygdala, the cerebellum, and the motor cortex. Now, that's how you acquire memories. Are you up with me thus far, Yusuf?
Yes.
You following me?
I'm here, Gary. First of all, I'm going to say that you mentioned the age. I'm 34 years old, and I'm an engineering student. And my problem has a lot to do with remembering, like, the formulas.
I'm getting to that, but you're on a cell phone. We got a poor connection. Now, let's take a look at how memories are lost.
Okay.
Let's take a look at how memories are lost. Scientists are not clear as to the specific reasons for age-related memory loss. It may be that our brain becomes less agile as it ages, or that imbalances in the system of neurotransmitters that communicate within the brain cause memory loss, or that other types of chemical imbalances in our bodies, such as changing hormone levels and impact our ability to remember things. What is known is that it is normal for anyone, even at your age of 35, to have lapses of memory, but that older individuals have a higher instance of memory loss. Now, studies suggest that the reasons we have trouble remembering things as we age is that it becomes more difficult to learn new information in the first place. Memory studies have shown that about one-third of otherwise healthy adults have difficulty with declarative memory. However, a substantial number of 80-year-olds perform as well as people in their 20s on difficult memory tests. And furthermore, all age groups retain newly learned information equally well, although it may take the older person longer to learn the information. And that's why you have to learn a couple more things here. First, we have to have even a cursory understanding of our brain circuitry. Brain researchers are now looking at the causes of memory, especially as it affects aging. But for years, they have speculated that changes may result from the subtly changing environment in the brain as it ages. Particular focus has been on the loss of brain cells and physical deterioration of the brain itself. But the role of an imbalance in the delicate system of neurotransmitters to conduct all communications in the brain has been an area that I'm particularly interested in. In fact, what is known as defective brain circuits, I believe, is extremely important for memory problems, more so than loss of brain cells. In fact, there was some research at Mount Sinai School of Medicine that examined the synapses in the brains of rats and discovered that the ability of neurons to carry a signal was lessened in older rats whose learning ability was impaired. And this reduced neuron activity was not correlated to age. Now, what does this mean in lay language? Well, it's important to understand that your entire body's circulatory system also goes to your brain. Blood carries nutrients to every part of the body, but the delicate tissues of the brain require a specialized security system. This is a very tightly woven net of endothelial cells, and it's called the blood-brain barrier, and it acts as a filter. It only permits in certain substances that travel from the blood to the brain. And the blood-brain barrier is responsible for providing neurons with glucose and other nutrients and also maintaining proper neurotransmitter balance. Now, the function of the blood-brain barrier is crucial because it protects us from toxics of all types, and it maintains a constant environment for the brain and protects the brain from hormones, neurotransmitters, and the rest of the brain. And the blood-brain barrier can weaken if you have high blood pressure, if you have a higher concentration of a particular substance in your blood, what is called hypersomality. Also, microwaves, cell phones, radiation exposure, infections, chronic viral infections, hepatitis, herpes, trauma, ischemia, any form of inflammation and pressure, all that can injure the brain. So what we know is that when you have a cola and coffee, alcohol and fried foods and sugar and artificial sweetener, all that can adversely affect your brain. And for example, there's age-related alterations. The brain, blood-brain barrier transport functions, including a decrease in choline transport and a decrease in blood glucose. And choline, which is one of our B vitamins, is critical in the manufacture of the neurotransmitter acetylcholine. And glucose is the primary fuel for the brain, and that's what supports so many of your cognitive functions. So it's important, therefore, that the brain have blood circulating that is rich in NADH, which is N-acetylcysteine, an amino acid, and also acetylcholine. And when you restrict blood flow, you restrict oxygen delivery to a very vital area of the brain. So that's one thing. We have to get more nutrients that are brain-friendly nutrients. And then everything starts to do better. But you also have to be aware of hormones, because, well, estrogen has a powerful influence on the brain, playing an important role in functions such as memory and language skills and mood and attention. And women who in the beginning of menopause suddenly cannot remember simple things such as their social security or phone numbers, and then they develop a sharp decline in hormone levels during menopause, and that wreaks havoc on memory. Fortunately, we can reverse that. And so you should consider the essential fatty acids, including the omega-3 fatty acids twice a day, black cumin seed oil. You've got to stop anything that's causing inflammation. And I just mentioned what those are: French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, colas, coffee. You have to have a check of your hormones to see if you are imbalanced with your DHEA, your thyroid, and your testosterone. You have to make sure that you don't have underlying atherosclerosis or heart disease, which will affect the amount of oxygen going to the brain. You better check your neurobrain transmitter levels, and that will then at least let you know that you're on the right path. And then exercise. Aerobic exercise twice a day of about 20 minutes will stimulate proper blood flow to the brain. That's terrific. That'll also lower your blood pressure. It also, you need to do some de-stressing, as I mentioned earlier, because when you're stressed, cortisol travels through the circulatory system to the brain, where it begins to wreak havoc on the hippocampus. And as we age, our body finds it more difficult to signal to the adrenal gland that it should stop producing cortisol. And prolonged exposure to stress, like a college student has, ends up causing the loss of brain cells in the memory center. And that is not good. So healthy lifestyle, de-stressing, lots of oxygenating juices like green juices, quality music, mental exercises, relaxation, concentrate, focus, slow down, organize your time better, and visualize positive things. There's lots of good things you can do. And then cranberries, lots of enzymes from papaya, mango, strawberries, black beans, Brazilian rice. These are all good for you. And then superstars would be vitamin C, folate, also choline, DMAE, also phosphatidylserine, N-acetylcysteine. Those will all help you. Okay, so that's a pretty comprehensive way to get started. All the best to you, Yusuf.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you one more time.
All the best. Let's say hello to Roger from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger.
Gary, thanks for taking my call. My problem is about a dog that is very anxious when we drive, and we live in the country and we have to travel long distances. And I would like to give him something natural to calm him down.
Have you tried Bach flower remedies?
Bach flower remedies, okay.
Yes. There are Bach flower remedies, and there are also homeopathic remedies that will calm the central nervous system down and allow the dog not to feel anxious being in that environment.
Okay, I know where I can purchase those.
That's what I would suggest. That's
May
I
ask you one more quick question?
All right.
Can I put food-grade diatomaceous earth? I know you said put it on the ground, but we live in the country, and the dog roams acres. Can I put it on the dog?
You don't need to put it on the dog. If you put diatomaceous earth by a spreader, so it's broadcast,
okay,
and so there's a light film of it, it will not hurt the dog or cat, but it will kill the ticks and spiders and fleas and sand fleas and anything in the ground it's going to kill, because it lacerates their bodies and it causes dehydration of the insect.
Thank you very much, Gary. We appreciate that and your program.
All the best to you, Roger.
Thank you. Bye now.
And let's say hello to, we'll go down to Marilyn and say hello to Don. Hi, Don.
Hi, Gary. Thank you so much for taking my call. Well, my memory is fine. I'm a senior. But I wanted to ask you if you could help us seniors how to maintain our skin as we age. I know that's important to you, but for example, things like sun damage or mold changes or brown spots, you know, that we get as we age. And also, of course, our hair. But the most important thing, as the biggest organ of our body, it shows, I think, the health of the inside. And I was wondering if you could tell us how we could maintain that and prevent, you know, bad changes that might happen.
Sure, I'm happy to help you. Start with the idea that your skin is really reflecting your internal biochemistry. So when you look in the mirror and you see that your hair is dry, falling out, your eyebrows are thinning, your fingernails and toenails, like a little specks in and ridged, cracked, your skin on your hands are starting to get a little spotty, and your skin is starting to thin out and become wrinkly. Your gums also continue to recede. If you press your gum, you might find that there's a little tiny bit of blood that's coming out. You find that you're waking up at night more frequently. You find you have a little indigestion. Almost all of these are due to an autotoxemia, which means that the things you didn't do right earlier in life, the karma of those are now coming up to you. I don't say that in any prophetic manner. I'm merely saying that we think that we're smart enough to make bad choices and outrun them. We can't. Every day I meet people who say, but I haven't smoked in 20 years. Yeah, but the lung cancer was due to what you did when you did do it. And so the mere fact that a person stops something doesn't mean that they reverse the damage of what they've done. I call it the laws of compensation. And here's what that means. To the degree that you have done anything that was a disadvantage to the body, or maybe you had a virus, bacteria, trauma, genetics, something that happened for any period of time, you have to exceed that in doing good. And I've seen this work so many times. I'm seeing it work right now, ending at the end of a four-week process of working every day, 20 hours a day, with a group of people who medicine had given it up. They'd all tried medicine. In fact, one of the people here is a physician with his mother, nothing worked, and already every one of these people made major progress, and they'll tell their own stories. Why? Because they had a good diet? Nope. Did a little exercise? Not at all. Because they de-stressed? No. It's because everything that could possibly help in the healing process, they did to an excess. Now, you have to do this in a guided way. You have to know what you're doing. But what it means is that most of us thought that as long as you just had a healthy diet, like in the 1970s, it was the macrobiotic diet. It was heavily promoted. And you had locally grown foods, organic foods, in season. And it was on a scale of 1 to 100, I would give it a 15, which is actually high. I give the average American diet about a 5 because it excluded vitamins and minerals. It did not get into detoxification principles. They didn't do a lot of exercising. And they also smoked a lot. It was more of a cult than anything else. In any case, it didn't turn around the people's health the way they had hoped. And yet when you take someone off a terrible diet, you put them on a really good diet, you will see the conditions they're suffering from begin to improve. Blood pressure will begin to improve. Your blood sugar will begin to improve. But the damage that's been done from these conditions doesn't improve most often. Slight improvements, but not reversal. So, what do we do? It means that we if we're going to really care about our skin, then you have to care about everything you do. You have to be conscious of all your choices, which means you can't take some vitamin C and smoke a cigarette, or take a B-complex and have alcohol, or go screaming at everyone and then go out and do some yoga. This kind of dualistic way of living, a little bit of good and continue what is bad doesn't work. You have to do everything right. Now, people say, well, that's impractical, that's elitist, that's... No, it's not. Because our cells do everything that's right. 100 trillion cells working every second of your body, doing everything that's right, until you, or some circumstance, interfere in that process. And even then, it begins to protect you and defend you and try to do all that's best for you. So you can have coffee and milk and dairy, wheat, any gluten, sugar, artificial sweeteners, anything with a face or heartbeat. So then you're going to say, oh, my God, there are a whole lot of things there. Well, what if I eat free range? Well, free range doesn't matter. It's still dead. You don't want anything that's been dead. You want something that's alive. Living foods give living energy. The vibration is a vibration that you can experience at the healing at the cellular level. Instead of doing one glass of juice a day, you might have to build up to where you're doing 10 or 15 glasses of juice, of living enzymes, and taking in the foods that rebalance your hormones, that rejuvenate your tissue, that turn off inflammation. And you cannot do that with a healthy diet. It's just not possible. So this whole myth that we've been living with, oh, have a healthy diet, it doesn't work. It's a fraud. It's a complete nonsense. I was very blessed and gifted that I had a best-selling book, which I believe is the most popular health-selling book in the history of America, The Complete Amic of Nutrition, sold millions of copies. And when I was a kid, and so I had a chance to come in and be at the beginning of my career when all these titans of the health movement, Carlton Fredericks, Adele Davis, Gaylord Houser, Lelore Cordell, Catherine Elwood, Bob Hoffman, all these, Paul Bragg, they all were at the end, but I met them all, Pablo Arola. Some were very nice people. Some were not. Some were so stupid and vain that they would go on national television smoking a cigarette, drinking coffee, and tell you that if you want to be healthy, just eat some high-protein diet, but make sure you get an extra 5 grams of fiber each day in your diet. And when I went to their national conference, I didn't see a single healthy person there. Everybody was smoking and drinking. So I then saw behind the scenes and saw that it was all fraud. But then I didn't see any of the people in their audience who were really that healthy. Yeah, they'd have some more fiber, but they were still eating basically unhealthy foods. And if you doubt me, go back and look at one of the biggest selling books of all, which was a cookbook, and look at how bad those recipes are. I went through that on an airplane recently. There was not a single recipe I would recommend out of that whole book, and yet it sold millions of copies. Fine for the author and the publisher, not for the people eating it. But we had a very constricted, narrow, monotheistic notion of health. Today, I would say, you cannot be healthy in an unhealthy environment. Now, how's that for an extreme comment? But I believe that, because epigenetically we are connected to that which we are involved with, both in relationships with people, at work, and in physical environments. Now, at one point, you'll wake up one day and realize, yeah, that makes sense. But until that time, our conditioned mind says, no, you've got to live here because it's where your work is. That's your security. Your family lives here. You can't move away from family. And all these conditioned responses that click on that protect us from making the changes we essentially need to do. And then we have ourselves. Well, I don't like that taste. I don't like that mouthfeel. I don't like that. But I like this. It's my comfort. But the comfort food's all pro-inflammatory. You're eating more protein than what you need. But they do on television. Yeah, and do you trust anything on television? They're there to sell you something. Edward Bernays, the master propagandist, who really was the leader of the entire let's sell people stuff they don't need, probably is bad for them, and get them to pay for it on credit. And then when they get angry and depressed, we'll sell them tranquilizers or more cigarettes to calm their nerves or alcohol. So you have to understand that everybody has a financial interest in making sure that you don't become radicalized, meaning you don't change from an unhealthy lifestyle. So if you want to ask me what is the cause of cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes in children, adult diabetes in children, over-medication of a society, it's our belief systems. The diseases are only symptoms of bad choices. So if you want to have healthy skin and healthy hair, there's not a pill you're going to take. You have to change your whole lifestyle. You have to look at every single thought you have, every single thing you drink and eat, and say, is this going to enhance my well-being at the DNA level? Is this going to repair my DNA, cleanse my DNA, cleanse my blood, and encourage a positive energy? If it's not, then the mistakes you make will be living a duality. But I'm doing something healthy. Why am I not seeing the results? Well, because you're not doing enough. But when you can do that, then you should see an absolute change in your skin, your hair, but your whole attitude, your energy level, your stress level, your inner biochemistry, your blood pressure, blood sugar, all that will begin to change, because then you can undo and reverse damage done earlier in life. Doing it piecemeal? No. No, then you're going to have to buy a book by Kubler-Ross on death and dying. Hope that answers your question.
Yes, well, thank you, Gary, but quickly I wanted to ask you, I'm taking the green juices and red juices, but how can I increase them without having bad effects?
There are no bad effects.
I mean, so I can go from one to four in one day without having excessive gas or anything?
Try them separately, then try them together, and a lot of people, myself included, don't have a problem.
Okay,
all
fine.
All the best to you.
Thank you.
And I'm looking at the clock. I'm sorry, our phone calls are packed. I couldn't get to Tim in Mississippi and Shirley in over there in Alabama another time. But I thank you all for listening into TalkBack, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. And remember, any time that you need to reach this show and listen in or go to the archives, call this phone number, 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869.